meet your beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news. Broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Alrighty, good evening. You are listening to the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. Of course, we're at www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. We're on satellite virtual channel W3957. We're on Access Communications Channel 7. That's on television. Kickradio.com, wherever else you can pick us up. I'm even told that you can find us on iTunes. I don't know the difference between a podcast and a P-Pod, but we're there and lots of people listen. My name's Dana Pretzer, and this is the Dana Pretzer Show. It's nice to have you. Have you, and this is going to sound like a commercial a little bit, but this is the best way to introduce my next guest. Are you feeling or are you forgetting things that you used to remember easily? Do you sometimes feel like you're slogging through the mud and just not as sharp and clear as you once were? Yeah, that's me. Whether it's due to stress, fatigue, poor nutrition, or a shift in hormones, I'm not sure about that, toxins, food allergies, or an infectious disease, there are times when our mental faculties are less than optimal. You know, I said to my 15-year-old the other day, I said, "You're in such a fog." And he looked at me and he said, "What?" Well, tonight, Dr. Benjamin Rothstein is with me. He has a new book called Brain Fog No More. I thought we'd bring him on to talk about this. It's a fascinating book and something that everyone thinks about because we all go through this. Hi, Doc. How are you?
Thank God, quite well. How are you?
I'm doing fine. It's nice to have you on the show. Now, I didn't mean to do the intro like a commercial, but I liked the press stuff that was sent to me. Are you forgetting things like you used to remember easily? Do you sometimes feel you're slogging through mud? You know, we feel like that. I know I'm at the age now where you can think of something and walk away and come back and you forget about what you thought about 2 minutes later, and we all laugh about it and stuff. But it's quite a natural or a predictable phenomenon, if I can use that term, called brain fog. And let's talk about your book and what the causes of brain fog are.
Okie dokie. Well, brain fog, first of all, the definition. What's brain fog? You know, the best way to describe it is brain fog. Your brain goes foggy, you know. But the truth is, it's really, you have like, your brain feels like it's not kicking on all cylinders.
Yep.
You can remember things, but it takes a while to bring it back up. Or you can do things. It just goes slower. And what most people are afraid of when they hit the brain fog stage of life is they're thinking to themselves, am I experiencing the early signs of Alzheimer's?
Exactly.
I mean, everyone thinks that. I mean, I've had that thought sometimes before I got myself, you know, detoxified. You start wondering and worrying. You hear all these stories, and I wonder if it's setting in. I'm kind of young, but never can tell. And so that's the biggest fear people have. I'll tell you an interesting story. I always tell the story at my seminars because it's such a pungent story. They did a survey of doctors, hospital physicians, and they asked them of all the diseases that you've seen, cancer and heart disease and strokes and arthritis and chronic pain and chronic fatigue and diabetes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which disease do you want the least? And the response was quite interesting. It was surprising. Of all things they've seen, what they want the least was Alzheimer's.
Right.
Because when you lose your memory, you lose your identity, you lose your dignity, you lose a lot. If your brain doesn't work, you lose a lot. And so what does it take to keep your brain functioning and fit for your whole life? Why does it be, you know, senile when you get older? There's no law that says you must be senile when you get older.
Mm-hmm. Well, mental faculty is something that we all worry about. Again, and I wasn't totally kidding, that I'm at the stage now in my life, and I'm relatively young still, but I'm over 40, where you hate to use that term Alzheimer's because I have family members with it, and it's a terrible disease, that we worry about the health of our brain. And let's get into a little bit some of the causes and things that may be affecting us and what we should be worrying about.
But let me add one thing, too, about Alzheimer's before we switch our topic.
Sure.
Now, Alzheimer's, there is a genetic component to Alzheimer's. It is genetic. Not all of it, but sometimes it can be genetic.
Mm-hmm.
But even if you have your genetic predisposition to Alzheimer's, if you take care of your brain properly, you don't have to have Alzheimer's. That's the ironic thing. That even if you're predisposed to it genetically, you don't have to have it if you take care of the brain properly. That's an incredible thought. So if you have the genes for it, you're not doomed to get it. And that's the book is aimed. If you work the brain properly, look at all the warning signs, like things are showing decreased brain function, and here's how we'll talk in a minute how to treat it, you can prevent a lot of problems. So let's talk about it for a few minutes.
Sure.
There's several things that are really common causes of brain fog. Probably the most common and most disastrous thing that affects our brains as well as the rest of our body is stress and fatigue. Stress and fatigue are probably the most damaging things you can do to your whole system. Your whole body is wrecked from stress and fatigue. You wreck it. And there's no getting away from it. The people drink coffee to stay awake. Well, that just makes it worse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if your body is tired, you need rest. You know, vacations are not luxuries. Vacations are necessities. You've got to take a break. You've got to refresh and rejuvenate. You're not going to last. And so, you know, I tell people that, listen, either take a break now, or I guarantee you'll take a break in a few years, and that'll be in the hospital. Worst thing, vacation, you know?
On the
hospital ward. Take your pick.
You mentioned stress, doctor, and that's something that everyone handles differently, but I don't think any of us in our day-to-day lives can get away from stress. We all have different definitions of it, and some would say, why does that bother you? And some would say, well, you know, that's not a big problem, but it is a big problem. We all handle it differently. That's one where I would like to ask you to, you know, to talk more about stress and the effects on the brain, and what can we do about that?
Well, the effect of stress on the brain, what happens, a person gets stressed, something that happens in life, something really they don't like, they don't want, get an adrenaline rush, you know, the fight or flight stuff.
Right.
And if you can't fight and you can't flee, where does that energy go? What happens to that emotional feeling? It goes inside. And the adrenal glands, things that put out adrenaline, the adrenal glands put out two major hormones in this situation. One is adrenaline, gets your body all charged, ready to go. And the other is cortisol. Keeps you hyper alert and puts your body like on super watchdog mode.
Mm-hmm.
And takes inflammation, you don't feel pain, you're just kind of ready to roll and fight and go to battle. Well, in the battle situation, that's great. But outside of battle situation, that cortisol rush has a very strong effect on the brain, and it slows brain function down dramatically. At first, it's an inertial burst, and then it just numbs the brain. You can't think clearly anymore after that. So the cortisol rush in the brain really causes a lot of damaging effects. It changes the brain's metabolism, the brain nerve cell function, the brain nerve transmission. It changes everything in the brain from stress, from the cortisol rush.
Mm-hmm.
So in treating, looking at the effects of stress in the body, I'm looking at the biochemistry. The biochemistry is you have an adrenaline rush, adrenaline's pumping out, your heart's pumping, the blood vessels are squishing down, the blood pressure goes up, you're breathing faster, you're kind of hyper-alert, cortisol gets your brain on hyper-alert, hypercharged, you can't sleep, you can't rest, you're all charged, moving, ready to rock and roll, fighting. And that's what goes on inside a person's body and their mind. So biochemically, we're dealing with those two major hormones. And when those two hormones hit, you also have a drop of the reparative constructive hormones like growth hormone and testosterone, DHEA. All the good ones are dropped down, and the bad ones are shooting up high. So there's two things to do. The first thing is to, how do you get the stress doesn't get you like that? And second, when you get it, what do you do now? So to avoid getting it, when I was in the Army in basic training and survival training, they said a very interesting thing. I was shocked when the military said this. They said to us that look at the POWs who survived the best,
mm-hmm.
and those who survived and thrived after war were the ones who had a belief in God, in a higher power. They said, we don't care how you do it, just get it. Because you'll survive better.
Right.
And so it is in different studies. One individual it was fascinating that the more lucid a person was, the less likely they were to die from heart attack.
So that's a release for your stress then. If you have a bad day,
it's a release or it's a prevention. I don't know. I'm not exactly sure why it works.
Whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, but everyone seems to experience the same thing.
And we talked about the religious aspect, but how about any therapies? You know, we see the supplements on TV. Some of them are scams. Some of them aren't. We hear about the natural holistic medicines that are out there. Make your brain stronger. Cure a cold. Do whatever you can do. Let's talk about that aspect and your brain.
Well, there's many supplements that do help the brain function better. My favorite one of all of them, now by these supplements, by the way, I have the website which I have them listed with the dosages, how to take them, and I have ones on there that I know that are high quality. I make sure that I test them or have tested them or tried them all myself to make sure that they're what they say they are.
And we'll mention the website now. I apologize, Doctor. I should have. www.brainfognomore.com. And then I'll mention that again at the end of the interview.
Great. Thanks. The most beneficial thing you can take to mitigate or ease the effects of stress in the brain is something called phosphatidylserine. The PHOS. Phosphatidylserine.
Okay.
And phosphatidylserine seems to reverse the effect of cortisol on the brain. Helps the brain relax, calm down, memory regains, your body regains its composure. It's really a very reparative substance. It's a fatty acid, actually, for the brain, and it works very, very well. So that's the first thing. Another good thing it takes for the brain, if you want a lot of stress to kind of calm the system down, is something called inositol. Inositol is a type of a sugar. It's a non-caloric sugar. It's actually good for you, and it also calms the nervous system down quite well. Certain vitamins work very well in easing the brain effect.
Mm-hmm.
B6 is one of them. Vitamin B6 is one of those critical vitamins that seems to affect everything and calms all nervous problems down. It's an interesting biochemistry. I could spend hours discussing that and doing it. I did a whole seminar just on B6. It's a fascinating vitamin. Actually, it's a cofactor. And B6 pyridoxal phosphate is a tremendously beneficial calming type B vitamin. So a lot of times people are very stressed out. They take a B complex, which works very well. A high dose B complex is very good for the body and for the brain. You know, one thing people try and do to handle stress is use alcohol.
Right.
Now, there's a place for that, actually. It does seem to calm the system down. But that's just a small amount, not a lot. Just enough to get the system to calm down a bit. But the problem is, there's two problems. One, if a person can't stop drinking.
Right.
You know, then there's a problem, they shouldn't start. And the other thing we find is that if you drink too close to bedtime, it destroys your sleep cycles. You fall asleep better, but you don't sleep well. The morning you wake up, you're not refreshed.
Mm-hmm.
And so the problem we get is people taking a nightcap. I can't tell how many patients I've treated. I mean, lots of them, dozens, I don't know, hundreds, who knows, that came with chronic fatigue. And I said, well, let's go through a whole history. I spent hours with them, the history and the physical, and what was on their day, and so forth and so on. And sure enough, they come and say, yeah, I'll have a glass of wine with supper at nighttime. I say, aha, no alcohol for 2 weeks. Tell me how you're feeling.
Right.
And almost universally, they come back feeling cured. I'm a genius. No, I'm not a genius. Maybe genius. That's hard. Just don't drink before bedtime. Because alcohol within 6 hours of bedtime will mess up your sleep cycles. It'll mess it up. You can't sleep well.
Yeah, that's good to know. Something that we see a lot of today, and I don't know, maybe it's just my brain fog, but I don't remember this when I was young, are the food allergies that we hear about. The kids that can't eat this or shouldn't go near that, sometimes it's deadly. And the connection with hypoglycemia, if anyone out there in my audience or, you know, any of your family have sugar diabetes issues, you'll know that someone, when they're having a bad sugar moment, are out of it, for lack of a better term, and how those affect the brain, Doctor.
Well, I'll tell you, the first important rule you have to know What you eat affects how you think and how you feel. What you eat affects how you think and how you feel. So certain foods will promote wellness. A well-balanced protein, carbohydrate, fat meal gives your brain, put your brain in what they call the zone. This book by Dr. Barry Sears, a brilliant, the best diet in the whole world, is called the Zone Diet. And it's a balanced diet will put your brain into a very high peak of functioning. Now, the problem is certain foods will affect people certain ways. For instance, some people cannot tolerate gluten. You know what gluten is?
It's in breads, I guess. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Gluten is a protein component of grains.
Mm-hmm.
So all grains, wheat, rye, oats, barley, and spelt, have gluten. That's the gooey, chewy stuff that makes it so good.
Okay.
Rice and millet and buckwheat do not have gluten. They're not grains, actually. They're kind of grains. They're not real grains. But real grains have gluten. And for many people, they cannot tolerate gluten, that gluten protein. And there's reasons for it, but the fact is some people just can't tolerate it. So if you find after eating a meal, whether it's, you know, a sandwich of some sort, it's kind of foggy and groggy and sleepy, it may be a gluten problem.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times you can tell what you're allergic to, what bothers you, by how you feel afterwards. And it's pretty clear. Some people cannot tolerate peanuts or celery. Unbelievable. I had someone couldn't tolerate celery. Or another common one is eggs. Eggs and dairy are real common ones. If you eat the wrong kind of things, your brain turns foggy, you get moody, you're grouchy, you're sleepy, you're irritable, or hyper, something happens, a change occurs. And if your person is sensitive and is aware of how they feel after eating something, well, then they learn what not to eat.
Right.
Now, I'll tell you a trick. You may be able to eat those things once in a while, perhaps once a week, but not every day of the week. If you eat it once a week or once every 4 days, it may not bother you, because it takes time to mount an immune response to food, cause an allergic reaction to cause a reaction to foods. So you may be off the hook, and you have it only once in a while. But some things you eat and hurt every time, then don't eat it. Don't have it at all for 6 months and try it again.
That's interesting. That's interesting for sure. You know, one thing that we hear about, and I'm part of in my other life, is shift work. When you work shift work, nights, days, afternoons, your sleep pattern is interrupted. Your biological clock goes all wacky. When you've done it, I've done it now for 25 years, you have a hard time switching your body over, so to speak, and that's got to, you know, you've talked a little bit earlier about sleep cycles, but that has to affect the brain fog, so to speak. What can we do, or what can shift workers do to try to deal with that?
That's a really important question. A lot of people have that problem. A couple of things. Number one, caffeine 6 hours before bedtime will mess up your sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're having coffee to stay awake while you're working, there's a problem there. You will have a problem sleeping and getting up the next morning. People always say, well, I can fall asleep. I drink coffee. I can still fall asleep. Yeah, but the next morning they need more coffee to get awake. Because you don't sleep well with caffeine in your system. You just can't. The chemistry does not allow it. So caffeine before bedtime, within 6 hours, just like alcohol before bedtime, will disrupt how well you sleep. So ease off the caffeine for 6 hours before bedtime, number one. Number two, if you're going to go to sleep in a room that's going to be deathly dark.
Right.
I mean, dark.
That helps.
It helps a lot. And if you put a white noise machine on so you don't hear any outside noises, a dark room, and taking melatonin. Melatonin is a hormone the brain produces. It's over the counter. It's very safe, and it helps you sleep. And I'll tell you how to take melatonin. Here's the secret. You ready for the secret to take melatonin?
You bet.
All right. You take a 3 milligram capsule, open it up, pour half of it under the tongue, close the capsule for the next day, take a small sip of water, swish your mouth about 15, 20 seconds, swallow it, lie down in a dark, quiet room. You'll be asleep in 15, 20 minutes.
Wow.
You wake up, you'll be refreshed.
If you're just tuning in, Dr. Benjamin Rothstein is here tonight to talk about his new book, Brain Fog No More. Emotions, laugh, cry, sadness, whatever, has to affect the brain. Obviously, they're a reaction of the brain. You see some people who are weepy, some people laugh at anything, and when they do laugh, they break down, and you have to wonder, are they really laughing or are they crying? You've all heard that saying. Let's talk about that and how they affect the brain.
You know, I tell you, I learned about that stuff when my wife was pregnant.
Yeah, haven't we all?
Laugh and cry at the same time. How did you do that? I mean, that was the funniest thing.
Yeah.
And what it is, really, it's actually hormonal.
Mm-hmm.
Hormones really can modify a person's brain response, how you interact with the world. And so it's hormones. And so if hormonal flux is normal, especially in women's cycles, and then as we go through a change of life, menopause for women, andropause for men, hormone levels drop, and our ability to interpret data of the world and interact with the world is also altered by our falling hormone levels. So that you require, really should get what's called bioidentical hormone replacement therapy. Natural hormones, put the good ones right back in, not the fake stuff, the Prempro, that kind of stuff, not the garbage, the real stuff. And it will stabilize a person's mood and their ability to think and to respond normally.
Kind of the thing.
You got to find a doctor who does it, though. That's the hard part. So some doctors are doing it more and more. But I actually give courses on how to do that. And they can contact me through the website of brainfognomore.com, and I can turn them all into one of my courses, and they can become trained in how to do the right kind of hormone treatments.
We've got about 3 minutes left, Doctor, and one of the things that I'm talking about tonight with my guests later on in the show are personality disorders, or what is this term, sociopath, that we hear about, or if somebody's narcissistic, or someone that's, you got to wonder what's the matter with their brain, what are they thinking when they go out and they do something. Is that covered in your book as far as, what kind of fog were they in when they went in and robbed that guy?
Not really. I don't really get into that. That's a whole other area of dealing with humanity, of people who have imbalances and abnormalities in the brain. What I will tell you is that when people follow the programs that's in the book, in the Brain Fog book, what they will get is they will get insights on how to correct and balance themselves out. And many times these problems go away by themselves. Like in kids, ADHD.
Right.
Or ADHD in adults. Many times it's an imbalance of chemistry, or it's a toxin in the body, or it's a lack of proper hydration. Something's going on. And once you correct that, a lot of times people get better just because they're basically more healthy.
And when we first heard about ADHD, the prescription Ritalin came out, and everyone was on Ritalin there for a while, and it became a huge problem. But there's more to that. It's more of the health of the brain. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yeah. I did. One of my special interests is treating kids with ADHD. And I will tell you that 80% of the kids are misdiagnosed. Easily. Maybe 90% are dismissed. I treated kids with serious ADHD, no medications, got them off medications, fixed them up, and there was just no comparison how they were afterwards. There's no comparison. And that's because they've got to get the right diagnosis. ADHD is a wastebasket term. You know, can this is ADHD. That's ADHD. Throw it in the basket. But kids may have real problems. It could be emotional problems, imbalances. It could be a structure problem where their head or neck is in pain. They don't realize it. They're just kids. They don't know the difference. And you balance them out physically or chemically, they're just like normal all over again.
The book is Brain Fog No More. Dr. Benjamin Rothstein, thank you for joining us. Of course, the webpage is www.brainfognomore.com. We have a link to how to buy the book on scaredmonkeys.com. Where else can they find it, Doc?
Amazon.com. Well, the book is called Brain Fog. The website is Brain Fog No More. The book is Brain Fog.
Okay.
And get it on Amazon, or they can go get it on the website.
That's fantastic. I think I'll sleep better tonight, sir.
Well, great.
Okay. Thanks for coming on the show.
It's a pleasure.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. And that's Dr. Benjamin Rothstein, and the book is Brain Fog. The website is Brain Fog No More. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with retired FBI agent, criminal profiler, and author Clint Van Zandt.
And now, more of the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. Here's Dana.
Ooh.
This is Scared Monkeys Radio. Clint Van Zandt is a retired FBI agent, criminal profiler, hostage negotiator, author, president of Van Zandt and Associates. You see him on TV all the time, and I thought I'd bring him on tonight to talk about, well, someone who's back in the news again, O.J. Simpson, and to get an update on the Madeleine McCann case that we talked to Clint a little while ago about. Clint, how are you? Welcome back to the program.
Good evening, Dana. Thanks for having me back.
O.J. Simpson, did you ever think that you'd see him back in the news again? Was this 13?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I did. I mean, this is a guy who's just a magnet for bad things happening.
That's true.
And, you know, I mean, he's like a proverbial bad penny. It's just, you know, it just amazes me the audacity that this sociopathic personality has where, I mean, having gotten away as far as 80% at least of the American public are concerned, having gotten away with a double homicide, this guy feels he is really bulletproof, that he can go out and participate basically in a robbery where, you know, everybody in the world knows his mug and thinks that because he's O.J., he's entitled to do whatever he wants to. And, you know, if you get away with a double homicide, I guess that tends to support that aspect of a sociopathic personality.
Now, we talk about that and hear about that a lot, that term sociopath or someone who's narcissistic. Mm-hmm. You, as a former profiler and still a profiler, when you look at an O.J. Simpson, at maybe even a Robert Blake, Joran Vandersloot, some of these other characters that we talk
sure.
about, let's talk about the difference between being narcissistic, being sociopath, and just what the heck do they mean?
Well, you know, most know, as you mentioned, Robert Blake, the American actor for years and years. Back in May of 01, he was accused of killing his wife, Bonnie Lee Blakely. She was about 44 years old at the time. He felt that she had tricked him into having a baby with her. The baby was 3 months old. He marries her. As you know, takes her out to dinner one night, takes her to his car, then allegedly goes back to the restaurant suggesting that he dropped his gun in the restaurant. You know what I mean? You know, you may drop a credit card, but it's hard to drop a gun. But
oops.
He says he dropped his gun in the restaurant.
Yeah.
And he comes back and surprise, surprise, somebody's put a bunch of bullets in her and she's dead.
Wow.
And even though, you know, the trial goes on and two different Hollywood stuntmen raise their right hand and say, we've known Blake for years. He tried to hire us to kill his wife and we wouldn't do it. Typical, you know, California jury says, well, that's really not enough. You know, we didn't see the CSI evidence that would actually link him. We think these two guys are liars, and therefore he, like O.J. Simpson, we're going to give a pass to and leave these guys out. You know, the sociopathic personality, as you know, I mean, depending whether you're a psychiatrist, a lawyer, or like you and I, Dana, in law enforcement, at least I was in law enforcement, you know, you discuss either the antisocial personality, the sociopath, or the psychopath. They basically, we're talking about the same thing. We're talking about a person who has no conscience whatsoever. Now, this is about 4% of the population of the world, by and large. Maybe some population groups a little larger, a little smaller. But these are people who really, they don't feel they owe anything to anyone. They feel that the world is their tomato, and they have a right to either eat it or squash it anytime they want to. They have a very low tolerance for being bored. They have to be out and doing things. They like to live on the edge. They like to be in the middle of excitement. But, you know, most importantly, when you get into the case of an O.J. or maybe a Robert Blake or other people like this, they have the ability to kill and feel that it's not their fault. In essence, they don't feel guilt for having taken a human life. In fact, their rationalization is the other person deserved it. And so be it. That's just one less problem person in the world. And if they could, they'd probably give themselves a medal for having done it.
What does this do to the public's perception of the justice system? Phil Spector, it's a hung jury, I believe. We keep seeing these high-profile cases, the drinking and driving cases with these young starlets who go in and spend 37 minutes in jail. It's got to be a defeating thought for those that watch and say there is no justice.
Well, here's Spector with his, you know, kind of a grade B movie actress that he's had in his house, and he has a history of pulling guns on women. Other women have testified that he's done that, and he's threatened them with firearms before. And here's Spector, whatever happens that night in the house, he apparently shoots this woman, walks out the front door of his house and tells the driver or somebody there, I think I've shot someone. And, you know, he gets a pass again. You know, I look between O.J., Phil Spector, Robert Blake, and many other cases. You know, that's the good, the bad, and the ugly of a criminal justice system where you have a trial by jury, because all you have to do is convince one of a dozen people that either the CSI evidence is not there, that you're a victim of racial or ethnic targeting, or you just come up with any reason whatsoever, and you convince one person who may or may not represent the same ethnic, racial, social group that you come from, and you're going to walk. And whether you walk on a third-degree burglary or a first-degree double homicide, you're still going to walk. You know, there's part of me sometimes that said, you know, I wish we just had one very learned man or woman sitting there, and he or she would consider the evidence, and that's it. You know, I would rather sometimes bet my investigation on the integrity of one person as opposed to the intelligence of 12.
Absolutely. A case that you've been covering and we've covered here on the program and you're still working on it is the Madeleine McCann disappearance. What's going on there?
Well, you know, this is a case, and I find myself like you, Dana. It's strange to be on, I don't want to say the opposite side of the criminal justice system, but I have been so jaded with the Portuguese system. In fact, it looks like I was just in New York yesterday filming an episode for NBC Dateline, and they asked if I would be willing a week from now to go to Portugal and do something again for an upcoming Dateline show in October, which I'm probably going to do. And I'm also probably going to wind up in jail because I've been quoted in a number of the Portuguese papers over there, suggesting my belief that the cops dropped the ball from square one. I mean, FBI drops the ball, too, so it doesn't, you know, doesn't necessarily mean cops or anything else. You know, interesting, as you know, the acronym COPS comes from the old British Constable on Patrol, yep. COP. So it's really not a negative thing to refer to a law enforcement officer as that. But in the case of the Portuguese, they did everything wrong. You and I know that in the first 4 to 6 hours when you have a child go missing, those are the critical hours. You either find a kid within those first half a dozen hours, or statistically you're not going to get them back alive. And the Portuguese just kind of drug their heels. They had a slow response. They didn't shut down this hotel. They didn't shut down the town. They didn't start doing a car-by-car search. They didn't start pulling film out of cameras and their equivalent of 7-Elevens. They didn't check the airports, the bus stations, the international borders, everything that you and I and others in law enforcement have learned you've got to do, and you've got to do quickly. The Portuguese just didn't do it. And, you know, as I've watched this case the last 4.5 months, as much as my heart is always with law enforcement, I've seen this screwed up so badly, and then realize that 3 years ago the Portuguese police were investigating a missing child. A single woman had a daughter who went missing. They brought her in and interrogated her for 24 hours, allegedly threw her down a flight of steps. I saw pictures of her. She was just beat to pieces. She confessed to the crime. They sent her to jail, and just now, just within the last few months, finally justice, it appears, is going to take hold. Some of these police officers have been suspended, and Dana, one of the lead investigators in her case that led that, where this woman was allegedly beat a confession out of her, is also the co-lead investigator in the Madeleine McCann case. So my belief and the strength of their investigative capability is limited at best. So then I start to see, you know, they pursue this one expat who lived next door, and although he may have been a good suspect, they couldn't put anything on him. But now, you know, I look at the police, and they're taking heat for this. It's like if they don't solve this, it's going to hurt the tourist industry, just like in Aruba with Natalie Holloway. The pressure's on the cops to solve this. And I'm just afraid. I'm just afraid in a worst-case scenario, they've turned around and targeted this husband and wife. Now, notwithstanding the McCanns screwed up, I mean, they left their children in a hotel room by themselves, which to me is unconscionable.
Exactly.
But we take that aside. They haven't come up with one iota of physical evidence, and the information that the police supposedly passed on to the newspapers there suggesting that Madeline's hair and body fluids, DNA, was found. I had a Portuguese reporter call me yesterday to tell me he found out that the hair found in this rental car that they didn't get until 25 days after she went missing, that hair is for her has been identified as that of her two-year-old twin brother and sister. And it looks like this other DNA where the police are suggesting her body had been transported in that car. Looks like that's starting to fall apart, too. So I think what we're going to see in the next few weeks is this case totally fall apart, and the police now are going to be forced to revisit the theory of kidnapping again, where they have so, you know, soiled the reputation of this couple. And, you know, did they do it or did they not do it? I don't know. You know, statistically, 14 to 1, the killer of a child in a common household came from that household. But in this particular case, I just, short of making a massive mistake and leaving their children unattended while they were 50 yards away eating dinner, I haven't seen any physical evidence or any behavior on the part of the two McCanns that suggest they had anything to do with their daughter's demise.
Well, it's a fascinating case and one we'll watch closely. Clint Van Zandt, you'll be on Dateline, MSNBC, and always welcome on this show. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye.
I know.
We'll be right back in a minute with Fred Rosen. He's a author of the new book, There But For the Grace of God. He likes to write books about crime stories, and we're going to continue on talking about Orenthal James Simpson here on the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
It's the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. And now back to the show.
Okay, we're back. Fred Rosen is the author of There But For the Grace of God. His website is www.fredrosen.com. I like this heading. It says, most murders are a dime a dozen. The real good ones are rare. I'm a true crime author and a historian. The history of people involved in crime and the crime social context give crime true meaning. He reports in that story, and I thought I'd bring Fred on to talk about what we've been talking about tonight, Orenthal James Simpson. Hi, Fred.
Dana, it's a pleasure to be back. I really enjoy speaking with you.
It's nice to have you back.
A few people that really make sense and has a good perspective.
Thank you, sir. It's nice to have you back on the show. Orenthal James Simpson, 13 years ago, nonstop cable coverage, you name it, we saw it. And here he's back. His suit is back. The cast of characters. I thought Marcia Clark looked terrible on TV last night.
I haven't seen. I don't know why. But I haven't, maybe I just haven't been watching deliberately. I've been reading a lot of it. I haven't seen her. But she never looked good to begin with.
Well,
you know, by the way, that her book was the last of those O.J. Simpson books to be published, and boy, did that book lose money.
Yeah, I heard that.
Big time. Lost millions of bucks for the publisher.
She's doing corresponding, or she's a correspondent for Entertainment Tonight, believe it or not, and she was covering the appearance for her.
Welcome to network.
You know, but
for Entertainment Tonight, okay. I like that. I think that should make a lot of sense to go from the L.A. District Attorney's office
to Entertainment Tonight.
Working. Yeah, I mean, it's sort of the same thing, isn't it?
Oh, perfect.
No,
yeah.
I mean, you remember that trial. I remember that trial.
I remember the trial. I remember the slow speed chase. I remember Mark Furman. I remember all of this stuff. In fact, TMZ screwed up so bad, they had a Judge Ito lookalike on TMZ.com here yesterday, and they thought it was Judge Ito, and they asked him, they said, is O.J. guilty? And this guy said, guilty of sin. But what they found out after, it wasn't Judge Ito. And the real Judge Ito slapped them a little bit, and they had to pull it off and apologize.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, that's hilarious. Well, first off, you know, I mean, Ito, I mean, he's a joke. anybody who watched that trial knows that one of the biggest problems with it was the fact, first, that it was put on TV,
right,
that Ito could not control what was happening in his courtroom. And most of all, you had an obviously stupid, easily led jury.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never said that publicly, but that's, I think, pretty obvious. I mean, if you've got the decedent's blood on your car, now generally that's sort of that might point toward guilt.
I would say, but here we are now, 13 years later, and we talk about, you and I exchanged some emails and talked about on the phone this term, sociopath, or someone who's narcissistic. In fact, I think you have on your webpage talking about OJ, him being narcissistic. A lot of people don't understand what that means. Let's talk about OJ, from your perspective as a crime author, historian. You got to admit, love him or hate him, OJ has certainly been historic as far as some of the stuff he's done.
It's funny, when I was writing this book called The Historical Atlas of American Crime, which looked at major American firsts in terms of crime. He didn't qualify because his case, which, as you point out, was, I think, 13 years ago.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. Was actually the third American trial of the century, or crime of the century. Third time that it had actually been used, that phrase, by the media. First time was in 1904, when Stanford White was killed by Harry K. Thaw. Second time was Leopold and Loeb in 1924, and the next time was O.J. Simpson in 1995. So I think, yeah, I mean, if you look at it from that point of view, from the point of view of the attention given to it and what it said more than anything about the culture of the time, yeah, there's something going on there, you know. But as far as Simpson himself, he's going to go down in history eventually with people like Bob Ford, who shot Jesse James, you know, and got away with it until somebody killed him, or Richard Loeb, you know, who of Leopold and Loeb fame, who died in prison, or Jeffrey Dahmer, who died in prison. See, that's what I think is going to happen here.
Now you look at
I'm like convinced of this.
Look at OJ and look at this cast of characters that he's with, right out of Central Casting. It's hard to believe this.
You just look at this and you go, is this real?
Could
somebody be that stupid? And the answer, of course, is yes. And it goes back to the point about narcissism. And the guy thinks he's the center of the universe. And he thinks he's unstoppable, and there's a good reason for it. He got away with a double murder.
What was
there aren't too many people who do that.
What was the movie, Fred? The old movie with, well, it's not that old, the old guys that went in and robbed the bank. Was George?
It was George Style.
That, whatever, it doesn't matter. This group of old schlumps seemed to be like that, with O.J. leading his posse. You have to sit back and just chuckle at that coverage.
But you know what, though? I'll tell you something. I think Vincent Bugliosi, who did a book on this, and did the whatchamacallit book, Helter Skelter.
Helter Skelter, yeah.
Vince says that one of the mistakes that people make is calling him O.J. It gives him too much respect.
Right.
He feels we should just call him, and I agree with him, it's Simpson. I mean, you got to, yeah, he burst through that door with his 60-year-old posse, but you know what? That's a guy who at one point in time,
right,
killed two human beings with his bare hands and left one of the worst murder scenes I have ever seen in forensic photos.
Almost decapitated his ex-wife.
Oh my God! Have you seen those pictures?
I have.
I mean, yeah. I mean, they're like, you go, oh my God.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy, this is rage. This is an animal. I mean, I, you know, and that's why I think I say, you know what? First off, thank God nobody got killed in that room.
Right.
You never. I mean, he went off once. He could go off again. I mean, and here is clearly a situation where, yeah, thank God these, you know, this was the, you know, the over the hill gang, but it could just as easily be, you know, some other situation. I mean, what I don't understand, I mean, you know, what I don't understand is how a prosecutor who has obviously access to the man's record, it still says he was charged with this crime, he's got a police record.
Right.
Right. And so he, I don't care who it is, and the guy's charged with armed robbery and kidnapping and all this stuff, and he lets him go on a $125,000 bond? Excuse me? I mean, you know, I don't think that speaks very well for the American criminal justice system, do you?
Well, that brings me to my next point. I saw that, too. We have another DA who is starstruck, a judge who is starstruck. And you're right. When you look at OJ, he's certainly capable. He's done it before. He could do it again. But the public persona of this case now and how the cable news networks have been covering it, they're almost jokingly covering this, not as a serious event like it was, but as, oh, here's OJ. He did it again. Then I'm not sure if you saw the press coverage with the lawyer for OJ Simpson and the goof that was standing beside him, giving him high fives that OJ was out again. The juice is loose. And how much, Fred?
I heard. I'll tell you, I didn't see some guy giving the attorney high fives.
Right.
I did see Greta Van Susteren going toe to toe with some attorney. Apparently, there was some guy that talked his way in.
Yep.
You know about this?
Yep. It was a another guy who went on, another lawyer in Vegas who went in and tried to become the attorney of record.
I was laughing. Yeah. I was laughing when I saw this. It was like,
it's pathetic.
That is truly pathetic. Actually, that's truly pathetic. But the fact that it isn't being taken seriously as a crime story is disturbing.
It's becoming a circus.
What a big surprise. Now, and you know, you like you said, there's a starstruck DA. Now, you know, You got this guy. One more time, folks. This is, they've got him nailed. And he can't get away unless there's no way this guy's getting away with what they've got. They've got eyeball witnesses. He admits he was in the room. So what are they going to do? But who knows, you know? Who knows? Maybe these people are just as stupid as those guys in Los Angeles, as Marsha Clark and Chris Darden. And I'm trying to remember who the DA was then.
Yeah, I forget, but it was, again, quite a cast of characters. The defense team, you don't hear much of F. Lee Bailey anymore.
I'm sorry.
What's his name? He's doing LegalZoom.com commercials. I can't think of it right now.
He was in trouble a couple of years ago with the IRS.
The Dream Team. Anyway, Johnny Cochran, yeah. If it doesn't fit, it must have quit. He's passed on. But here we are again, and Fred, just in our last few minutes here while I've got you, your perspective as an author and someone who's followed a lot of crimes.
Right.
O.J. Simpson's murder of his ex-wife and Ron Goldman, I don't know if I consider it to be the crime of the century, but this is going to parallel this case to what has gone on before with nonstop coverage. There's a lot of other stories out there, missing persons.
Deserve the coverage.
Internet predators, you name it, things that I've covered here 100 times that deserve the coverage. Why?
Oh, I see your point. That's a great point.
Why are the cable news groups covering this? Well, you and I can answer it right away. Ratings. But is that fair?
Of course not. Of course not. Of course not. You've got a situation where suddenly the guy that started this whole cycle of reality-based court television, I don't know any other way to put it, perhaps. This is the dude who started it all, He's a double murderer, and he was an actor and a football player. I mean, Adievsky couldn't have written it any better in Network. So what we have here is a total blurring of the difference between news and entertainment, and the victim is really this society's ethics and what it says here that a person can do this sort of thing. And literally, so far the guy's gotten away with it. He's not being treated like anybody else. I can't believe anybody else would be out in 125K.
Well, exactly.
What it says is that right now the American political system, or jury system, criminal justice system, must look pretty bad to the rest of the world. And I apologize on behalf of my fellow citizens.
You know, and this whole press conference when. Simpson, I like that. Mm. I'm not going to call him that other name again. When Simpson was released and his lawyer was out there, and this, I don't know, this clown was standing there talking about the juice being loose and all this sort of stuff.
He's
standing right beside Simpson's lawyer. Deputy sheriffs all over the place, and all of a sudden the focus comes on this guy who is acting up, talking about Simpson. He'll probably get his own reality show on MTV or something.
Uh-huh.
And it just makes you shake your head when it comes to the public's want, because they know that people will feed on this stuff. And I don't know, maybe it's just me, maybe I'm too old-fashioned, but there's got to be other things.
No, I don't think there's being anything old-fashioned about it. I think what we can certainly say here is tonight that a double murderer is free to murder again within American society because of our glamorization of his celebrity, or call it what you will, but the bottom line is we're all the victim of this.
Yeah.
And that's not a very good thing, obviously.
No, that's for sure.
That's not a very good thing. I sometimes wonder, you know, if this sort of thing had happened someplace else, you know, if it happened in New York or Miami, would it be any different? But you know what? I knew something like this was going to happen anyway. I knew it was going to take about 10, 12 years, but I knew someplace down the line, history shows, anybody gets away with murder in that with that kind of a celebrity, somebody's going to, at some point, they're going to make a mistake, or somebody's going to come gunning for them. And that's, frankly, what I think is going to happen here. I think eventually, I'm going to be positive and say, yes, I think he is going to go to jail and serve time, and I don't care if it's 4 months or 6 months. At some point, he will not be in protective custody, and then somebody's going to put a shiv into his back or something like that. That's what I think is going to happen.
Well, he's going to be he'll be a target, that's for sure.
I'm sorry?
He'll be a target, that's for sure.
Yeah, and you know, and he's still somebody's father, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't see these things lightly.
No.
I don't, but you know, I don't know if I'm being old-fashioned or what, but when I found out that Ted Bundy got away twice from the cops, escaped, and the second time he was a convicted killer, and they didn't put out an order to shoot to kill. Excuse me.
Exactly.
You see, I think you know this is a different situation. You know, this is a situation where you know this person is a bad guy. You don't let him out. Period.
Yep.
Okay. Treat him like any other bad guy. Unfortunately, it hasn't happened. We can just hope that the system's going to work down the line.
Yeah, and that the judge and the DA don't have visions of their own TV shows down the line to muddle this all up. Fred Rosen.
I keep wondering, you know, where's that guy Larry, whatever his name is, from Florida? You know, remember him?
I remember.
The one with the
the crying judge. Yeah.
Anna Nicole Smith.
He'll be on. He'll be
on. And now there's a judge out in Los Angeles. His name is Larry Fiddler.
Yeah.
First, that's a great name for a judge, Larry Fiddler.
Yeah.
And Larry is the judge at the Phil Spector trial.
Exactly.
Which is a big deal.
Yeah, and another Hollywood case that's got everyone shaking their head. Anyway, I got to go.
And the jury's deadlocked, right, Dana?
They're
deadlocked.
They're deadlocked. It's a hung jury and a whole other story. A whole other story.
Hung jury and the girl had the gun in her mouth,
yeah,
right?
Right.
Yeah, I felt like doing suicide at the party.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
The defense's contention.
Another, you know.
Same thing. It's like there's this perverse need to take these really disgusting people who obviously have a lot of problems, like Simpson and Spectre, and turn them into some sort of God-forsaken heroes. I don't know.
Well, it's not my God, that's for sure. Fred Rosen, author...
It's certainly not mine either. Thank you, sir.
Fred Rosen, author of There But For the Grace of God. It's always fun to have you on the show. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Dana. Take care.
We'll stay in touch.
Okay.
Bye-bye. That's it. That's another Dana Pretzer show for this week. We'll see you again real soon. Remember, our webpage is www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. The podcast should be available about an hour from now or a little bit later, and you can pick up our daily commentary and sign up for the daily reminder at scaredmonkeysradio.com. Good night.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.